Thanks, Ignacio. Thanks very much, first, for hosting my visit here. It's a great pleasure and honor to come to the sort of the mother of process systems engineering. I appreciate that there's a lot of activity here, and I look forward to discussing with the students and the faculty here on the topics that you're researching on. What I will try to do today is give you a sort of a overview of the work that we have been doing on agent-based models for enterprise and supply chain management. But let me first start with the overview of the kind of things we are doing in process systems engineering area in the University of Singapore. Our interest, in slide number two, you see an overview of the topics that we broadly work on. This is the traditional CAPE-PSC pyramid, which describes the levels of the enterprise and the different decisions that people need to make, starting at the plant operator at the bottom of the slide to the CEO at the top. So at the unit control level, our research is in using image-based control strategies for particulate processes and polymerization systems. So the idea here is to take in advances in sensors, particularly image-based sensors like video cameras, put them into process vessels like crystallizers, and use that to get the state of the process sort of in real time. This is particularly applicable in situations like in pharmaceutical processes, where particle size is an important indicator, but one that cannot be easily measured any other way. In the area of process supervision, we have worked with a number of companies in Singapore, deploying soft sensors, alarm management strategies, process transitions for diagnosis kind of applications in actual plants. The plant design kind of area is where our interest on sustainability and inherent safety gets to play a role. We also do some energy and water optimization. And at the top two levels is really what I'm going to be focusing on during the presentation today. So here we have been largely working with refineries and petrochemical companies and some specialty chemical manufacturers, trying to do scheduling optimization of the supply chain and develop some robustness metrics, which helps them figure out if the decisions they are making are robust given the disturbances which hit the system. And at the highest level, at the enterprise level, we look at agent-based modeling, trying to put together in an integrated fashion all the decisions that need to be made in running an enterprise. And we do this largely using dynamic simulation kind of approaches. So in the slide number what you're going to see is the way we started into this topic about 10 years ago. So this slide shows the supply chain of a refinery. This is the kind of a supply chain that a specific refinery in Singapore in the Jurong Island complex operates. It starts with procuring crude, typically from the Middle East, and this crude is transported by VLCCs, large crude carriers, to the refinery in Singapore, where it is processed, and subsequently the products get stored and then transported via various means to customers like electricity producers, the airport where jet fuel is supplied, and then gas stations, and finally naphtha is sold to petrochemical companies in the Jurong Island complex. So this is the supply chain that particular company is interested in, and the problem that they approached us, this is nearly 10 years ago, was to help them operate their crude oil scheduling system. So the nature of the problem is very well known in literature and probably to many of you, where we have a crude coming in through VLCCs in this case, and these need to be unloaded to different storage tanks, and then finally these tanks are connected in combinations typically to different crude distillation units from which it feeds into the downstream process. So the decisions that are needed here are to figure out which ships to unload at what point in time, into which tanks, and then which tanks then to connect to the crude distillation units. And we developed a scheduling formulation, some of that work has been published in literature. But the main takeaway message that I want to highlight from this slide was not just the fact that we did the algorithm development to solve this problem, but when we continued working with the company, observing how they use the results from this the scheduling algorithm, what we found was, by and large, they would take the results from this, but not just use it directly. They would tweak it, sometimes, or more often than not, by small amounts, but very often, when there are delays in the ship, or there are other disturbances in the process, they would make major changes. And those major changes were not restricted just to the schedule here, but to many other decisions that they had made a priori, assuming that the system is going to work as it is. Now, this fact of life, that small disturbances in one part of the system can make huge disturbances in other parts, in slide 5 is summarized in this proverb that many of you may have heard of. It says, for want of a nail, a shoe was lost. For want of a shoe, the horse was lost. For want of a horse, the rider was lost. For want of a rider, a message was lost. For want of a message, the battle was lost. For want of a battle, the kingdom was lost. And all for the want of a nail. This talks about small disturbances having major impacts in complex systems. And this is going to set the tone of my presentation today. So in slide 6, the title of the next section is Integrated Models for Supply Chains and Enterprises. And the previous slide tells you why we got interested in looking at the supply chain and the enterprise in its entirety, and not just at the scheduling part, which is where we got started. So after about 10 years of work in this area, this is the way we like to think about it. About 40 years ago, in slide 7, you see images of process units, and the process systems engineering community and the chemical engineering community in general started developing fairly complex models of different units, and then these models were used for designing, simulation, control, optimization, etc. With the onset of the distributed control system and many other advances, many of these units got tightly integrated, and then people realized that having just good knowledge of the unit alone is not adequate. One needs to consider the interactions between the units when they got put into a plant like the one in slide 8. So one started worrying about the effects of disturbances in networks of units. And what we can do based on these models then is to integrate them and do plant-wide design, simulation, control, synthesis, planning, scheduling, supervision, maintenance, and risk. And this has sort of kept the PSE community very busy in the last 30 odd years. The last 15 years or so, as we see in the next slides, this point of view has shown itself to be just one component in a larger network where different companies participate to form the supply chain of an enterprise. So not only do we have a single facility, we have storage facilities distributed around the world, and then additional players, suppliers, and customers come into play, and these sometimes, or more often than not, are connected via these transportation modes like you see in the sandwich layer of this diagram. So the basic message one takes away from a picture like this is that one needs to consider now a network of networks. The networks, of course, refer to the process unit networks within each of these facilities. In slide 10, we see how the PSE community 40 years ago figured a fundamental way to analyze process units. And that was using diagrams like these, which sort of condense in a very compact fashion all the information related to the integration, the interaction between the process units. So you have the flow of materials as well as the flow of information, typically through control loops, all captured in a single diagram. And this diagram basically is the fundamental means to do design, simulation, control, etc. The question that we started asking ourselves was, typically we think of supply chain as shown in slide 11, where you basically capture just the interactions. These interactions in slide 11, of course, correspond to the flow of material. But is that adequate? The answer that you started to think about is that it is certainly not going to be adequate just to look at material flow, but as shown in slide 12, one also needs to look at information flow. So if you look at a refinery, the particular refinery that I mentioned earlier, for them, their supply chain starts from the crude producer dispatching crude through a logistics provider, and the material then flows on to the refinery, and from then on in the form of products to downstream customers. But that is, as the dotted lines show, a large number of information flow, which sort of controls the flow of material, if you will. So one needs to think in a little more depth about how this information flow affects the material flow. So for supply chain management, in slide 13, you see a number of fundamental questions that have been traditionally asked and answered. This being, what products to make and sell, and taking a step back, what are the raw materials that are necessary to make these products, and when should these raw materials be bought? Typically, these questions are answered in an operational sense, in the form of demand forecasting, scheduling and planning, etc., or in a design sense by facility or network planning of the supply chain, the transportation network design, etc. Traditionally, again, the key drivers for answering these decisions is to optimize or manage the resources more efficiently, that is profit maximization. The question then one asks is, how are these decisions made in real life? In the case of the refinery that we're working with, as shown in slide 14, these decisions are not made by a single individual using a single tool. Actually, there are a number of tools and algorithms that are used, and these are used by various different players who run and manage the supply chain of the refinery. In the case of the sales department, they look at demand forecasting, and then they work with the procurement department, which is in charge of deciding which crudes to buy, and then working with the logistics department to have these transported to the refinery. The operations manages the running of the refinery to make the products, and the inventory management is done by the storage department on the far left. The departments, of course, don't act in isolation. That's a tight interaction and integration between decisions that these different departments make. So in the next slide, which is slide 15, you notice the flow of decisions, the flow of information over time. With when a procurement cycle starts, the sales department makes a forecast about the demand, which is then sent to the procurement department, which then figures out which are the set of crudes which are available in the market for spot purchase, which can be used to meet this demand. And this set of crudes, it's called the crude basket, is sent to the operations, which figures out if any of these or all of these are indeed processable given the refinery's own constraints. And subsequently, they work with the logistics department to make sure that these can be sort of brought in at an economically attractive price point. And other decisions relate to assignment of the transportation contract to a logistics provider, placing the order with the supplier, and then making sure that all of these happen in a reasonable time and price point. This, we think, is the fundamental flow of decisions which need to be captured in its entirety to fully understand and deal with the disturbances which hit supply chains and enterprises. We started looking at agent-based models for capturing these integrated supply chains and enterprises. As shown in slide 17, agents are a software computational entity. They are said to perceive their environment through sensors, act upon them using actuators. The key differentiator between agents and objects that all of us would be familiar with is that agents are meant to be autonomous, meaning they make their own decisions using whatever tools and devices that they have in their control. And usually they make these decisions to pursue their own goal or carry out tasks to meet their own objectives. So they are either proactive or reactive in trying to achieve these goals. And another key characteristic of agents is that they are social. They communicate with other agents to meet their goals. When we talk of a system of agents, they are called a multi-agent system. We consider a network, and we typically consider a network which is loosely coupled, and these agents collectively try to solve the problem, in this particular case manage the supply chain of the refinery. And the reason there are different agents spread out is because no one agent is capable of solving the whole problem in its entirety. So there are typically heterogeneous agents, and they interact with one another to achieve coordination, sometimes cooperation, and other times competition and negotiation. The example that sort of brings out the issue of the key elements of a multi-agent system is probably best illustrated by any complex surgery. As all of us know, most major surgeries require not just a single doctor, a single surgeon. It needs a number of specialists, some in charge of anesthesia, others in terms of tasked with the job of opening up the person, a third just to operate on a single organ, and so on. And these all have to work with one another collaboratively to get the objectives done successfully. One needs similar kinds of agents in most other settings, and that is really what we're trying to exploit in the refinery supply chain context. So in slide 18, we see the different agents that we believe adequately model the supply chain as far as the refinery is concerned. So on the left, you see the different departments. Now each of these are considered to be agents: the procurement, sales, storage, operations, and logistics departments. And then externally, because these are in a sense elements of the system which over which we don't have as much control, we consider the entire petroleum exchange or the oil supplier or the logistics provider as one entity without digging deeper into how they function, because that information may or may not be available to us. So these are the different agents in the system, and for each of these, one could model their different behaviors. For instance, in slide 19, you see the procurement department has a primary function, which is to purchase crude, as I mentioned earlier, and its goal is to do this function and purchase crude at a fair price as and when required. As and when required, meaning maybe regularly, once a week or once every fortnight, or it could be any time there's a shortage of crude, which may happen because a ship which was scheduled to arrive did not show up. How does it meet this goal? It is this by, as I mentioned earlier, through its social ability, by interacting with a number of other agents, for example, with the sales, which gives it information about the forecast of the products, with the supplier, which gives it information about the available crude, etc. The procurement department, in turn, informs a number of other agents, for example, the sales, the supplier, operations, logistics, etc. And these different interactions and the way it makes the decisions which feeds each of these messages can be captured using models of various kinds. Of course, as I mentioned earlier, the procurement department may use various tools, for example, optimization tools, to make certain decisions on which crude to purchase. So they are sort of subsumed in these agent-based models. In slide 20, you notice the same part of the model, the agents, but now focusing on the interaction between the different agents. So each of these is the list of things that a particular agent, for example, the storage or the procurement or the supplier, performs. And these lines show the interaction and the different problems that the agent is solving, which then leads to different interactions. And slide 21 is a synthesis of all the messages between the different agents, but now shown in the form of a block diagram. So now you notice that the different messages which are passed between the different agents, the suppliers, shippers, jetty, the refinery, and so on, lead to certainly flow of information, which is what we set out to capture. But in a simulation system, they also can be used to capture the flow of material. In a real system, of course, real material flows. In a simulation system like the one we're dealing with here, the flow of material is also captured through passing of messages. So this communication between the agent results lead to discovery of the supply chain. And this is sort of highlighted in a little more detail in slide 22, where you see now the flow of material first in the supply chain, captured in a fashion very similar to a process flow diagram that all of us would be familiar with the crude suppliers on the far left, feeding materials to the crude transporters, the jetty, and the refinery in the block, and then subsequently the refinery process leads to different products which are then stored in storage tanks and then shipped through again by sea in this example to the final customer. This shows the flow of material, but just like in a real plant, there are different controllers which trigger the opening and closing of valves to control the flow of material. In the refinery supply chain, or any other supply chain for that matter, there are a number of controllers. The controllers that I refer to here in the supply chain context are the different departments which make different decisions, and they do this by sensing different parts of the supply chain. So it could be level sensors, flow rate sensors, etc. And they take control actions, again, typically flow control actions on the different control elements in the supply chain. So we think of the different departments, the different decision makers in the supply chain as controllers and the hardware as the process. Now, what does this representation buy us? Just like the system flow diagrams bought us a variety of means to understand, simulate, design, control the basic process, a chemical process, a similar extension to the supply chain gives us exactly those extensions. Let me start with the simulation, which is in slide 25. It shows you a dynamic simulation of the agent-based model, which gives us, in this particular case, the evolution, dynamic evolution of inventory levels of five different crudes over a horizon of about 4 months, with a simulation resolution of order of an hour or so, or even 15 minutes. Notice large step changes when crude is discharged into the storage tank from the VLCCs, and then slow ramp downs as the crude is consumed by the process. And one can look at any of the hundreds of variables out there in the supply chain by using similar means. So that is interesting, but also it also gives us to address the original problem that I mentioned earlier in the beginning of this talk, as shown in slide 26. One can also consider how the plans made using different decision support tools like the schedule that I talked about earlier would or could differentiate from the actual depending on different disturbances hitting the system. In slide 27, what I want to do is now highlight the various kinds of additional things in addition to simulation that one can use these kinds of simulations for, these kinds of models for. So I'm going to be talking about new policies for planning and scheduling. I'm going to be talking about tactical decisions like conversion of a tank depending on certain outcomes in the refinery, and then other strategic decisions, just as an illustration. So one of the problems that the refinery that we were working with was concerned about in slide 28 was to confirm that the way they operate the supply chain is indeed as optimal as it can get. And turns out that they had a good reason to be concerned about that, because once we were able to first develop a base case model, which through various tests was confirmed to more or less replicate the supply chain as it was, we could then study how changing different decisions, controllers, in the supply chain would affect their supply chain performance. We measured the supply chain performance using a number of metrics, key performance indicators, the average crude inventory, average product inventory, average throughput level, which talks to utilization of the plant, but also more grosser ones like the product revenue, the amount they were spending in purchasing crude, inventory cost, and a number of others. And we found that by tweaking some of their policies, for example, the way they procured crude, one could make significant changes to the profit. Significant changes not because the plant was running any faster or was processing any more crude, it was just operating a little more efficiently. So in the example with the new procurement policy, there was a huge reduction in the demurrage cost, the penalty that they were paying to shippers because they could not unload the ships in time using the current way that they were running the system. We could find a way to change the procurement policy which would almost eliminate that waiting penalty. That would lead to almost a doubling of profit over a 4 month kind of a time frame. We also found out that by changing the way they were planning their production, one could further reduce the product inventory and make another 60% improvement in the profit, in the bottom line. One could also use, as the next slide 29 shows, these kinds of tools for figuring out if capacity expansion or other supply chain design decisions would make sense. So in this particular case, at that point in time, which were quite before the current economic turmoil, they expected large increases in the product demands in the region, the supplier in the market base that they were targeting. And the question that they were asking is, should they put in an additional line to process crude, so additional crude distillation unit? And by generating, by simulating a number of scenarios, we found that an investment of order of $100 million would pay itself back in less than a year. So again, running the simulation, but for hundreds or sometimes even thousands of scenarios, and asking if this is a good decision to make in terms of the supply supply chain design. These are traditional decisions that we have seen in supply chain literature, and which have been also addressed through other means. So one, in the sense, in slide 30, gets not just that benefit, but new types of decisions that the current formulation, the way of looking at the supply chain in its entirety, enables us to do. I'm going to focus largely on risk in the next portion of my presentation. And we're going to be talking about risk, looking at the fundamental decisions that we make in the supply chain. As slide 31 shows, we make decisions regarding what products to make and sell and what raw materials are used for that purpose. But during operations, as well as in design, one needs to consider risk. Now, risk can have not just a negative connotation, meaning to be able to react efficiently to disruptions, other supply, production, demand, uncertainties, but also a positive connotation. So if market opportunities lead to changes in the product demands, typically higher product demands, is the refinery agile enough to respond to it? And can it source the raw materials typically in a short time frame to take that opportunity into its lap? Now, why is risk important? There are a number of surveys, even recent ones, which show that in general, in slide 32, you see that the drivers which have been key to supply chain and risk increase, for example, global operations, single sourcing, specialized production sites, outsourcing, lean and just-in-time operations. And a recent survey by McKinsey shows that most executives in 3,000 major corporations around the world agree, two-thirds agree, that risks have increased over the 5 years through 2006. 40% of the companies did not think they spent enough time or resources on mitigating these risks, and a quarter agreed that there was no formal way that they had in their operations to do a risk assessment of their supply chain, and almost half said the company did not have any specific standards to mitigate risk. Again, this is a message which has come out loud and clear in the last year or so, but in the supply chain context, using the supply chain flow diagram representation that I mentioned earlier in slide 33, one gets to sort of look at the lessons we learned from the process systems engineering work in this area in the process risk management, and one can extend this to supply chains. What I mean by that is, in the chemical process design world, one does not imagine building a plant before doing a proper risk assessment, typically using a technique like a hazard and operability study, a HAZOP study. The question is, here is a technique that all of us are familiar with in the chemical engineering community. Can we not extend it to enterprises and supply chain? How does one do that? Using the representation that I mentioned earlier. So in the supply chain flow diagram, one can take any unit or any line and ask what are the different variables of interest, of importance there. For example, in the line connecting the jetty to the process, one can look at the flow rate, the amount of flow of crude into the refinery. And that's an important variable. And one can apply a number of guide words, like in a typical HAZOP study. So no, high, low, etc. So if you consider no flow of crude or no crude arrival, one can ask what would cause this deviation. So the number of reasons which can lead to this, for example, jetty unavailability, shipper problems, supplier stockout, etc. And one can identify these in a fairly systematic fashion. What will be the consequences of this deviation on the downstream units and the supply chain entirety? There will be low stock, or in the worst case, out of crude situation. Operations would be disrupted in either of those cases, and demand would be unfulfilled. One can again systematically ask, what are the safeguards that are in there in the existing system, which helps us either detect these deviations or minimize the consequences that would happen. And one important one, of course, is the safety stock. Is this enough? Maybe, maybe not. And if there are additional mitigation actions required because this safeguard is not deemed to be adequate, then one could ask what actions are possible. And if we are considering the deviation having occurred due to shipper problems, then one could insist on a more reliable shipper. Now, this is a systematic way to identify causes, identify consequences, and then try to design safeguards and mitigation actions. But one can also take it a step further and do a reliability study. We can do that because we have a mathematical model or a simulation model of the supply chain, which lends itself to these kinds of Markov analysis. So in slide 35, you notice that we have considered various scenarios where the reliability of the logistics provider has been studied. So given the current safety stock situation, as the first table shows, we notice that even with the safety stock, if the logistics provider's reliability is low, the customer satisfaction is about 95%, which probably is adequate. But what has given way, however, is a profit, which is only $38 million, given a low reliability of the logistics provider. If one could switch to a higher reliability logistics provider, the profit would go up to 93%, and the customer satisfaction would go up to 98%, given the current safety stock policy. One can even ask if this safety stock can be reduced or decreased significantly. And again, there are quantitative measurements which tell us that this may be a possible thing to look at. So this is one additional kind of decision that one can make given these kinds of comprehensive integrated supply chain models. One can also ask how one deals with disturbances in a systematic fashion in processes. All of us from a first course in process control know, as shown in slide 36, that we design feedback controllers which take into account the effect of disturbances. And if these disturbances become large or failures occur in different parts of the process, one then uses a diagnosis system to detect and then recover from these failures. The same can in fact be done in the case of supply chains, as shown in the next slide, where various disruptions do occur in the processes which run the supply chain, for example, the crude procurement process in the refinery. And these failures can be detected, notified to supply chain managers, and diagnosed, and one can rectify them. The analogy that we are using in slide 38 is a dashboard of the supply chain, which is similar to a DCS screen for the chemical plant. So just like an operator would use a DCS screen, a distributed control system scheme, to figure out if things go wrong, get messages in the form of alarms when there are high or low temperatures, pressures, etc., one can design alarms for events in the supply chain. And when these alarms occur, one can then design various means to detect root causes, identify rectification options, and then optimize and figure out the most beneficial one, the best one for the given situation, as shown in slide 39. And then this corrective action can then be implemented, executed on the supply chain. So the loop can be closed, not just for small disturbances using a local controller. It can also be used to close sort of monitoring, control, diagnostic loops for the supply chain as a whole. Again, we have studied a number of scenarios with the refinery. In slide 40, we show a specific instance of a transportation delay, which happens when a ship, which was originally scheduled to arrive on day 115, instead arrives on day 121. This 6-day delay, if it was not dealt with promptly, would have led to a stockout situation for 2 days, and there would be a significant loss in the profit of the refinery at the end of the year. What we are able to show is that by timely detecting this using the techniques that I showed in the previous slides, one can take recovery actions, decrease the throughput in advance, and then even do some emergency procurement to meet the crude shortfall of 758 kbbl. And by managing the disruption using a number of these strategies, one can first of all prevent the shutdown of the crude distillation unit and then continue to operate it even though in a slightly lower throughput fashion, and then try through this disruption. We have studied a number of other scenarios similar to this, but I would probably not have the time to go with them in any detail. But a point that I want to leave with in this point of disruptions is, as shown in slide 41, that when an event like this, a disturbance like this happens, it's not just the procurement department which has to deal with emergency procurement or the operations department. Almost every aspect of it, of the supply chain, has to be re-looked at. So in this particular case, slide 41 shows the original schedule as was planned for the situation, assuming that the ship was going to arrive on day 115, does not remain feasible anymore because inventory of the crude in the tank that was supposed to feed to the distillation unit would go to zero. So the existing schedule is infeasible, and if it was detected and dealt with sufficiently in advance, then there would have been a proper rescheduling which used the information that we talked about previously, which leads us back to the original motivation for this work. In the remaining 7 minutes or so, what I want to show is the methods that we talked about in the context of supply chain can also be extended to the context of an enterprise. So in slide 43, what you see is, first of all, a supply chain of a specialty chemical manufacturing enterprise with base oil being procured from a refinery, a number of other ingredients from various suppliers, the processing itself, and then these products are packaged in various forms and then sent to different customers. What I'm interested in looking at in this particular situation is not just a single plant, but a set of plants which together contribute to this enterprise. Again, this is a company that we have worked with closely for a number of years now. This particular company has a global headquarters in Europe and 3 plants, one in Asia, one in Europe, and a third in Houston. So the issues that we want to study are not just the supply chain issues as I was looking at in the previous part of the presentation, but also the coordination between the global headquarters, the central sales department, which coordinates different between the different plants. And again, the approach that I talked about earlier, using agents to model the supply chain, can also be extended to modeling the enterprise level coordination. So slide 45 shows that the different interactions between the customers and the global sales, and the interactions between the global sales and the 3 different plants, can be again captured using the same kind of formalism. In the interest of time, I'm not going to spend much. I'm not going to get into too much detail about this interaction. All I want to do is summarize in the next slide that these kind of models can be developed using a number of tools that again we are familiar with, such as MATLAB Simulink. And slide 46 shows 2 different levels of these models. The one at the top shows the simulation of the entire enterprise, comprising of the customer, the sales department, the global headquarters, and then the 3 different plants. Now, each of these plants itself is modeled with its entire supply chain, and that is shown in the block on the bottom right. Slide 47 shows a list of case studies that we have looked at for this particular company. Again, I would not have the time to go through each of them. I just want to focus on a couple here. First, starting with in slide 48, the job assignment policy. How does a plant get a job? So remember that customers interact with the global sales department, and initially, the global sales department had a policy of treating all plants like children, meaning treating them all equally. But we showed through some simulation studies, actually a number of simulation studies, that using a different policy where an expected completion date plays a key role in deciding which plant to assign a job can have a significant improvement of almost 15% to overall profit, but also improvement of nearly 30% to customer satisfaction and a decrease of about 75% to total tardiness. So better coordination between the headquarters and the different plants lead to a significant improvement in the overall enterprise performance. In case 49, we showed that given the current push towards sustainability, one can also consider the customer location to decide which plant gets to take an order. And so by assigning the order to a plant which is closer to the customer, as shown in slide 49, one can make a higher profit because the transportation savings are significant, but that is a little leeway that one has to allow to customer satisfaction, which decreases because the orders are not uniformly described distributed around the globe, and there are pockets which place more orders. So a certain plant gets a larger fraction of utilization, while others don't as much. In slide 50, I return to the theme of disruption. In this particular case, we considered a situation which happened in reality about 3 years ago. And in slide 50, you notice that when a plant goes down, if there is not much collaboration between the different plants, meaning the job just gets to process those orders, when it comes back alive after its maintenance and turnaround, then one is not as efficient as looking at a way to reassign the jobs which are in progress to other plants in the interim while this plant is undergoing its turnaround. And with this, the tardiness can be reduced significantly, and the profits go up also, although somewhat. In slide 51, which is my last example, I want to come back to the theme of small changes. So in this particular case, by incorporating just one additional factor to the scheduling policy, by considering how inclusion of an order into an existing schedule may affect other orders which are already in the pipeline, by taking that into consideration, one can increase the customer satisfaction from about 65% to 92% in a specific scenario. So a small modification to a policy could have a big impact to overall enterprise performance. Okay. What I've tried to cover in the last 45 minutes or so is that looking at the enterprise or the supply chain in its entirety offers some additional benefits. These benefits are on top of what we already achieve by using complex decision support tools, optimization techniques, scheduling, planning approaches to run the enterprise. Because the decisions made at the different levels are not isolated, but they are related through the plant operations, through the way the plant is controlled, and also the way the supply chain is designed. So dynamics which are both in the short term or in the long term can propagate through the enterprise, as I have shown. And by considering these dynamics, one can make more holistic decisions. We have looked at agent-based models as a way to capture these integrated models. And I have not spent much time here, but one can use simulation optimization kind of strategies to then optimize any of these decisions, looking at the supply chain in its entirety. And we have looked at the design of the supply chain as well as control structure design using this simulation optimization enterprise. So in summary, the process systems engineering community has developed a number of tools which are at the process level. And what we are claiming now, and I hope I've shown at least some of it today, is that these kinds of representations, modeling approaches, and simulations can be extended to the enterprise level as well. Thank you very much for your attention. Happy to take any questions.
Let's see, I think Donald Falter, are there any questions or comments on the presentation? I just wanted to add maybe just one comment that I did not make in the introduction, which is that Professor Srinivasan is also involved in an institute called the ISIS, Institute for chemical engineering scientist, which is placed in Jurong Island, which, as you might know, is, you know, houses a huge chemical complex. So I think a lot of the problems that we saw here have been actually motivated by these, you know, practical applications. So again, are there any questions or comments out there for Professor Sreemukh?